Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado, coming to you on a snowy, blustery day, which is funny because, you know, just yesterday it was almost 70 degrees here in Denver. But today we've got cold, we've got wind, we've got snow. It is springtime in the Mile High City. That's just what you get. Hey, just so you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports that you're not going to get anywhere else. You can download the podcast on iTunes. If you're not an iTunes person, you can get it on Stitcher. You can go to podcastdirectory.com. Couple different ways that you can get it. By the way, if you do enjoy the podcast, please, 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 go to iTunes, give us a review, give us that 5-star rating, you know, make up some good lies and say how much you like it. Feel free to use phrases like greatest podcast in the history of the world, Clint Daly is a genius, things like that. It means a ton to us if you can go on there and you can get that rating and review on there. Helps us get into the new and upcoming podcast. Would appreciate that so much. A couple things. If you would like to contact me, a few different ways you can do so. Twitter handle is at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y. Don't throw in those extra vowels. You can find me on Facebook, Daily Dose Sports as well. And we do have a website. If you haven't checked out the website, I would encourage you to do so. It is dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can find the podcast there. You can find some articles there. You can find some polls there. You can find a few different things that you won't get anywhere else. So we had to make sure we get that info out to you. This week on the podcast, we have a few different things. Obviously, as you know, as usual, we've got some breaking news and some things like that coming out. We're going to discuss March Madness. We're going to preview that Sweet 16 that is coming up. It has been a fun tournament. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Got some NFL moves that you might not be aware of that we want to discuss. Going to take a look at the NBA a little bit. And as usual, we do have a very special Daily Dose Top 5 that you don't want to miss. That is a very, very popular segment. I swear I get more feedback about the Top 5 every single week than I do anything else. The Daily Dose Top 5, something you do not want to miss. March Madness. It has been a lot of fun. We're going to get started here tomorrow, going with some more games, getting into the Sweet 16, and like I said, we will get you ready for that. It's been a fun tournament. Few things that are coming out today. You know, I realize that it's March Madness, but you know, in other schools, the schools that didn't make it, you know, schools like UNC Charlotte announced on Wednesday that they are going to be hiring former NBA point guard Mark Price. You might remember him at Georgia Tech. Mark Price is going to be their new head coach. Few different, you know, coaching moves, and you start getting that coaching carousel going right around this time of year. Coaches get fired. Who's going to take that job? What vacancy is that going to offer up? So there's a few different moves that you just want to keep an eye on. Mark Price is going to take the UNC Charlotte job. That is a better job sometimes, I think, than people think, because you can recruit big time. Yes, you're right up against the Dukes and the Carolinas and the you know, Carolina States and stuff. That is a decent job. You can still survive in that job. Mark Price will take that over. I think he'll do a very, very good job there. Couple other things. One thing coming out in the NBA, Chicago Bulls point guard Derrick Rose has said on Wednesday he has no pain in his surgically repaired right knee, and he thinks he can return before the regular season ends. You know, he had that torn meniscus. It wasn't like he was going ACL or MCL. Derrick Rose says he can return, but who knows? That's the plan, he says, but who knows? I know. I doubt he's going to come back. I think with Derrick Rose, and I like Derrick Rose, I think he is incredible, but I think it is not so much a physical thing. I think it is very much a mental thing, and I want to see if he can recover. Not just to be on the court, not to just be a guy out there taking up space. Can you come back and play the way you're truly capable of playing? His game, I don't know if his game lends itself to allowing for that. I think that's going to be a little bit of a struggle. The New York Jets in NFL news, the New York Jets, you know, they have this rivalry going with the New England Patriots, which is kind of odd. Because it is a rivalry, and at the same time, the Jets never win, so I don't know how much of a rivalry it really is. But the Jets have filed a tampering charge against the Patriots, based on Patriots owner Robert Kraft, who at this point I think just runs the NFL. He says that Robert Kraft made some comments Monday about Darrelle Revis. Robert Kraft, Patriots owner, speaking in those owners meetings down in Phoenix, says, "I speak as a fan of the New England Patriots. We wanted to keep him." And the Jets, say that this was a move, because remember, the Patriots had filed tampering charges against them, so we've just got kind of a back and forth thing going on. It's insane what is going on right now, with between the Jets and the Patriots. Keep an eye on that and see if that goes anywhere. I doubt that it will, because I believe Patriots owner Robert Kraft kind of runs the NFL. Hey, here's another story, and we keep seeing these. We're seeing more and more of these, and this has to start concerning the NFL at some point. Former Michigan starting center Jack Miller announced earlier this month he is not going to play his senior season at Michigan because he is concerned about the long-term impact of past and future concussions. He says, I know I've had a few, and I want to walk away before things get worse. Yes, schools have reached out to me, but I'm ready to walk away from it because my health and happiness is more important than the game. I've told you before, we are not going to see the NFL just collapse. It's not just going to fall. But you are starting to see this more and more and more. And if I'm the NFL, I would start getting a little more concerned. Here's the big news, though. Here's the big, big news coming out today. Apparently, the Milwaukee Brewers are going to introduce the next big baseball food. It is going to hit Miller Park this season, and it is called Inside the Park Nachos. And what this is a stick of beef loaded with refried beans, rolled in Doritos, and deep fried and drizzled. You have nachos on a stick, deep fried. Do you understand how amazing this is? Deep fried nachos on a stick, coming to the Milwaukee Brewers home park at Miller Park this baseball season. I got to be honest. And you know, if you listen to the show much, you know I'm not a huge, huge baseball fan. I think that league has some issues. I enjoy the game itself, but I think Major League Baseball kind of gets it wrong more than this time. We're finally getting something right. We're finally getting something good in Major League Baseball. Now, I'm not in Milwaukee. I'm obviously in Denver, so that's a little bit of a problem, and some of the food we serve here at Coors Field is not quite that. But, you know, this, not only are they serving this, it's got four different types. You've got the chorizo, you've got Italian, Polish sausage, bratwurst. You've got a couple different ways to go about this. I mean, nachos on a stick, deep fried? How does it get any better than that? One thing that I would throw out there to just have a little hesitation about. Remember what we talked about previously. The average baseball watcher, the average baseball fan is upwards of 50 years old. Don't kill them off just yet. Let's talk about March Madness because it has been a fun tournament. There have been close games. We've seen some overtimes. We've seen a couple upsets. We've seen some big shots. But you know what we don't have? I don't feel like we truly have this year. That's a little bit different. That's a little bit odd to me. I don't feel like we have any Cinderella stories. I don't feel like we have any real underdogs left. There's a couple. I mean, everybody, I guess, has an underdog to Kentucky. Kentucky is the huge, you know, landslide favorite. But do we really have any Cinderella stories? I mean, is Wichita State a Cinderella story? I understand that Wichita State, you know, is a 7 seed? But are they really a Cinderella story? They were in the Final Four, 2 years ago? I'm not sure Wichita State, you know, fits that bill. Xavier. Xavier is another team that you might look at and say, well, you know, Xavier's a little bit further down, and maybe we didn't see them coming quite as much, but it's not, I mean, they're a 6 seed. It's not like they're a true Cinderella. They were in the Elite Eight like 2 or 3 times. They've been to the Sweet 16 multiple times. Xavier kind of has its little niche of being that team that kind of gets in. Gonzaga. I know Gonzaga has never been past the Elite Eight, but Gonzaga is not a true underdog. It's not like they're a Cinderella story. We kind of expect the Zags to be there and at least be in the thick of it. The lowest seeds that we have, like UCLA. UCLA is an 11, but it's UCLA. They're not a Cinderella. They're the winningest, you know, program in the country. So UCLA is not really, we don't have that this year. I think the closest, I don't know, Utah? Maybe Utah? Utah's going up against the big dog this week. I get, they're not really Cinderella. They were in the runner up, just back in 98. They went to the championship game. Same thing with North Carolina State. North Carolina State has won a championship before. We just don't have that this year. We don't have a Cinderella team. How are your brackets looking? How are your brackets looking? I know my bracket got busted pretty well. You know, the teams that got knocked out, I think, busted a lot of brackets. Virginia, Iowa State, Villanova, of course, the number one seed going down. Kansas and Baylor wrecked some people's brackets. There are a few brackets out there I know that got busted. Now, if you picked Kentucky, you're still doing well. Just keep in mind, you have 8 million other people that also took Kentucky. So it may not pay off for you quite as big as what you'd hope. But I know, speaking to a number of people, I know that a lot of brackets were busted. That's what we expect this time of year, isn't it? That's what we love about March Madness. That's what makes it so great. Let's take a look at the Sweet 16 games that are coming up. And to me, I enjoy the first round, not the play-in round, not that goofy Tuesday night play-in game between the two 16s or whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean. The first round, the real first round. I enjoy the Thursday-Friday games. Those to me are great. You've got basketball literally. I know locally here, Mountain Standard Time, we've got it from 10 a.m. to like 11 p.m. I mean, you've got basketball on all day. I love that round. But the Sweet 16 round to me is really where it's at, because now we've gotten down to you don't have, you know, the huge blowouts usually. You don't have this huge disparity of talent, between the teams. And so the Sweet 16 round is always the most fun to me, because you still have a lot of games. You still have a ton of games. You're going to have 8 games going between Thursday and Friday, and then you'll have another 4 going on Friday or Saturday and Sunday. So I love this round, but you start to weed out some, you know, the 16 seeds that shouldn't quite be there, and the team that just kind of scraped its way in and won its conference tournament, but we know they're probably outmatched when they get there. This to me is the most fun round to watch. Let's take a look at a couple of these games, and I just want to give you some thoughts on the games when you're watching them, some things to keep in mind as you watch these games. Kentucky versus West Virginia. And I know Kentucky trailed early against Cincinnati this past Saturday. But you know what Kentucky brings to the table. They're so big. They have so much depth. They can go 10, 12 deep if they need to. So big, and they just dominate the boards. Kentucky is going to be very, very tough to beat. I will give West Virginia a shot in this, though. But there's a couple things that I want to look for. We know that Bob Huggins, the head coach for West Virginia, is going to make adjustments. And I think he makes adjustments that are really, really subtle. You'll see kind of mess with the press. You'll see him switch it up when he feels like it's maybe not working the way that it should. If you watched West Virginia against Maryland, they forced 22 turnovers. They forced 22 turnovers. I mean, that's a ton. And so I do think West Virginia can battle. Here's my concern. There's two key things that I want you to keep an eye on in this game, and I think they're going to be very telling, and they're going to tell us whether or not Kentucky blows this team out or whether West Virginia is in it. One, I want to see who gets more shots. Who gets more shots up? Basketball is a simple game. Sometimes we kind of make it more complex than it really, really is. If you have a good offense, then you get better shots. I get better shots than my opponent because my offense is better. Maybe I have better players, maybe I have a better scheme, but I get better shots because my offense is better. I get more shots if my defense is better. So you get one shot, I rebound, and we go down and say we get 2 or 3 shots. If I get more shots, then my defense is better. I want to see if West Virginia can get more shots, because here's my concern with West Virginia. I don't think they can shoot it very well. They've got to get a lot of shots to make one shot. So I think we need to look who is getting more shots. That's going to tell us a little bit of how this game is going to go. Here's the other thing I really want to look for. And we know what West Virginia is going to do offensively. They're going to spread the floor. They're going to go 5 out. They're going to try to get things cutting and attacking the basket. We know that that's what they're going to do offensively. What I want to see from their defense is, can they play the high-pressure defense that West Virginia is known for, especially under Bob Huggins? Can they play that defense, and can they do it without fouling? Because if you foul Kentucky, they shoot the free throws well enough, they're going to make you pay for it. And we've seen West Virginia sometimes be a little bit prone to fouling. If they can keep those fouls under control, and they can play good defense and get more shots. Again, if they can generate some turnovers, they're getting more shots. Then I want to see if West Virginia can stick it. We also know Bob Huggins has beat Calipari in the past. That's nothing new. It seems like these two coaches face off a lot in the tournament. I want to see if West Virginia can do it for 40 minutes. Can they sustain it? Should be a fun game. I'm taking Kentucky, though. I want to see West Virginia hang in. I want to see somebody test Kentucky. I would pick Kentucky if I had to pick them. Next game on my list, and one of the games I'm really looking forward to, is Notre Dame and Wichita State. You know, so far in this tournament, there's been a few great finishes. There's been some games that right at the end, you know, with what Georgia State did and some of the upsets that we've seen, some of the last second shots. For my money, one of the best games so far of the tournament was the Notre Dame-Butler game. You saw just completely contrasting styles. Notre Dame wants to come down. They want to spread it out. They want to shoot. They want to get some spacing. They're going to run the floor. They're going to push pace, try to get transition points. They're going to shoot the three. Then you have Butler, who was going to settle in on defense. They were going to run some clock. They were going to try to, you know, screen and rescreen and see if they could get a good look. That was a really, really interesting game. I thought Butler probably should have capitalized on a few mistakes and won that, but Notre Dame gets past them. I think this game is going to be a little bit similar, too. Here's the one thing that stands out to me. You can't turn the ball over. And that was one thing that I thought Butler did a little bit too much. They turned the ball over. Wichita State is a tough, tough team. When I look at kids like Ron Barker, I just look at it and say, that is a tough kid. When you look at a kid like Fred VanVleet and you say, that is just a tough kid. I don't know how talented these guys are. I mean, they obviously have talent. They are not without talent, but they're tough. They're tough kids. Wichita State plays like they are a team that has something to prove. Like they almost feel like, you guys don't think we belong here? We think we belong here and we think we can beat you. What I would like to see, in this game, Notre Dame versus Wichita, I think they both have solid guard play. I think their back cards on both of them are pretty solid. I think those wash each other out. I want to see whose front court can dominate. I want to see, can Notre Dame go inside? Can they get something out of their front court? I want to see, what do we get out of that front court from Wichita State? I get the feeling Wichita State could pull this upset. I like Wichita State in this. Could they shock them? Want to see that. Let's look at Wisconsin versus North Carolina. We kind of know what we're going to get with Wisconsin, don't we? They're going to execute. They don't turn the ball over. They're going to run that old, you know, Bo Ryan. I know they've kind of re-upped it and it's a little bit newer. It's the old swing offense. You can spin it however you want. It's the old swing offense going back to like the 50s. Yes, they've tweaked it a little bit, but it's the same thing. And as long as you execute it, it works. There's a couple things about Wisconsin that I'm really, really liking in this tournament. One, they do execute and they don't turn it over. Very, very few turnovers. Sometimes it feels like they're overcoached. Sometimes it feels like we are, you know, going at a glacier-like pace, but they don't turn it over. The other thing I like about Wisconsin is they play very, very good transition defense. You're not going to get those easy gimmies just outletting up the floor and we're going to get an easy layup. You're not going to get that at Wisconsin. The other thing, they don't foul. And I know that there's a thought out there, sometimes not fouling is a bad thing. Sometimes you need to foul. Sometimes you need to have that physical kind of thing. Wisconsin still plays pretty physical defense, but they play it without fouling. I think that could be key. I think they will take away. We know North Carolina wants to get out. They want to run. They want to transition. They want to see if they can get easy threes and easy looks in the transition game. I don't know if you're going to get transition looks against Wisconsin. Some of the benefit of playing offense the way they do is they really limit what you get in transition, and they know how to get back. I like Wisconsin in this game. I think they will limit what North Carolina can get in transition, and then we are going to see, can North Carolina execute in the half court? And if they can't, I think it might be a long night. I would take Wisconsin in that game. Xavier versus Arizona. This is one of those matchups. I told you last week, you can see that the committee kind of looked at the bracket and said, who could we have pair up here? I would like to make a little bit. Now, you know, you might not realize Sean Miller, head coach at Arizona, was a longtime coach at Xavier. Now he gets to play his former college. You know that the committee kind of wanted this. He gets to go against his old team. Xavier, very, very disciplined. They don't force. They take good shots. They make a high percentage of them. I like Xavier a lot. The problem is Arizona looks like they might be the second best team, maybe even the best team in this tournament. They're very explosive. They can hurt you so many different ways. And they're very, very good defensively. I know sometimes you look at their scores and it looks like their scores are bad. They can dominate a game completely with their defense. I like Sean Miller. I think Sean Miller is one of those coaches that if he gets into a big game, it is very possible Sean Miller can win a game and just outcoach the other coach. Has a lot of X's and O's, runs a lot of good stuff, and gets his kids, it seems like, in the best position where they can be effective. I like Arizona a lot. I like Arizona in this tournament. Like, I really like the way they're playing right now. I think Arizona, it might be the team to beat. I think right now it looks like it's Arizona and Kentucky. Carolina State, North Carolina State, and Louisville. I still don't think Louisville can shoot. I know that they've you know, gotten their wins and they've won a couple games. Struggled a little bit with UC Irvine. That was a weird finish to that game in that first round. UC Irvine's trying to foul. Louisville's trying to foul, and the refs, I don't know if the refs are checking their brackets or what, but they don't pay attention, and they let him, you know, steal the ball because they're just knocking the guy off the ball. Kind of a weird finish that game. I don't think Louisville can shoot, but their defense makes up for a lot of things they do offensively. And so they can get out transition, and because their defense is so good, they end up generating easy baskets. I think North Carolina State is almost a mirror image of Louisville. And so, again, we talked about earlier in the show with Kentucky and West Virginia, who gets more shots? I think in this Carolina State versus Louisville game, it's going to be who gets better shots. Can one team's defense generate some layups for them? Because neither one of these teams are great shooting, especially from deep. They're not a great shooting team, either one of them. Who gets better shots, I think, wins this game. I guess I take Louisville, but I don't know. I think this game is a complete toss-up. I like some aspects of Carolina State. I like their point guard. I'm going to take Carolina State. No, I'm going to take Louisville. No, I'm going to take Carolina State. I'm going to take one of the two teams. I can't decide which. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, not being able to decide on some things. Let's move on. Let's move on to Oklahoma versus Michigan State. We have, in this game, we have two, not one, we have two great, great coaches. Lon Kruger, you might not know about Lon Kruger. Lon Kruger has now taken five different schools to the NCAA tournament and won a game. Lon Kruger is a phenomenal coach. I can tell you this from personal experience. Lon Kruger is a really, really nice man, too. Tom Izzo with Michigan State. He's got a championship. He's been to six Final Fours. And something about Tom Izzo, when his team starts playing in March and April, it just seems like the light goes on, and all of a sudden his teams start getting confidence, start playing better, just start executing. I mean, it really, really is amazing. These two coaches. I guess I would take Michigan State. I really, really like Valentine at Michigan State. I don't want to compare him to Magic, but he sees the floor really, really well. Poor man's Magic Johnson, maybe broke man's Magic Johnson. I don't know, but I like what Valentine does. I like the way he sees the floor, and he's able to see over the defense a lot. I would take Michigan State in this game, but this is going to be a battle. Both teams will rebound. Both teams will transition. It's going to be who can execute, probably who can execute in the half court and who can shoot a little bit. Duke versus Utah. And when you look at this matchup of Duke versus Utah, your first instinct is to say, hey, Duke is going to blow Utah out. Not so fast. Don't jump on that just yet. I think this might be a little bit of a surprise. Utah might be the closest team defensively to a team like Kentucky. They have some size. They have the seven-footer. I think they have two seven-footers. They will force your jumper. They will rebound. They will clean everything up rebounding-wise, and you won't get any other opportunities. Now, Duke had better get very, very good shots. And one thing about Duke, you know, they have Okafor, and I like Okafor a lot. Again, I hate to compare these. They're just aspects of their game that remind me of other players. I hate to compare Okafor to Tim Duncan, but I think Okafor reminds me a little bit of Tim Duncan because he's so comfortable down in the low post with his back to the basket. He has great footwork, especially for a young kid. And so part of me makes me think of Tim Duncan when I see him playing down there because he's really comfortable with his back to the basket. He'll get the ball in the post, Not only can he execute and score, but he is a great passer going inside, outside, down there. And so Okafor is a kid to me that could really, really cause problems because he can go. One of the most dangerous plays in basketball in general, just throwing this out there, is when you go to the low post and your low post player can make that pass to the opposite side of the floor. It takes a special player that can do that, but when you can do that, it is so tough to defend. And Okafor is that kind of kid. Duke had better get good shots, and they better knock them down when they get them, because Utah is far more of a pain than you think they are. Now, they can't turn it over, because if you turn it over, Duke's going to go, you know, convert that into points. Utah plays really tough defense. Got the opportunity to watch Utah a few times this year just because now, you know, being Pac-12 and that kind of thing, got a few opportunities to see them. Utah is a tough, tough team and really, really good defensively. I'm interested to see what Duke does against them. Should be an interesting game. UCLA versus Gonzaga. I honestly don't think UCLA can match up. Gonzaga spreads the floor. They shoot it very well. I just don't know if UCLA can stop them. I don't think UCLA's defense is great. I think their offense is getting better. I don't think their defense is great. And I think that that could really hurt them because Gonzaga, again, can score a lot of points very, very quickly. I think Gonzaga will spread them out. They'll swing the ball. They'll get a lot of movement. And when they get open shots, if they knock them down, I don't think UCLA can hang with them. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's a mistake on my part. But when I look at who UCLA has played, playing SMU, and then playing UAB, you've kind of gotten over on some teams that maybe aren't the highest of quality. I don't like UCLA in this game. I think the Zags beat them. I want to throw something out to you. I just want to lob this out to you because, you know, when you think of basketball, when you think of basketball history, where do you think of? What place? Specifically, what place do you think of? You know, there's a lot of different things. I mean, the game of basketball, you know, created by James Naismith, it was created basically in Springfield, Massachusetts. You know, he had the peach bucket. They basically were playing with kind of a modified soccer ball, and it was something to do inside when the weather was bad. So maybe when you think of like basketball history, you think of Massachusetts. You know, the Basketball Hall of Fame is in Massachusetts, in Springfield. That's where it's at. So there's a lot of history. There's a lot of basketball back in that part of the country. Maybe you think of Indiana, obviously, you know, the Hoosiers and Hoosier hysteria. Not sure if you know this, but Indiana was one of the last states to go away from having classless basketball, which what I mean by that is that every school, and you saw in the movie Hoosiers, any school, it didn't matter the size of the school. You weren't separated by class. You played whoever was in your region. That's just who you played. And so you could have that small school, you know, like happened in Hoosiers, which is based on a true story. You could have that small school go through. So maybe you think of Indiana. Are you aware that the biggest high school gyms, in the United States, of course, are in, I mean, like 13 or 12 of the top 15 are all in Indiana? You've got Newcastle, Central, I think Seymour, Richmond. Marion High School is got a huge one. And when you think of the gym sizes, Newcastle High School back in Indiana seats over 9,000 people in a high school gym. Central is over, I think it's around 8,300 people. Marion is over 7,500. I mean, these gyms are huge. So when you think of, you know, basketball and basketball history, Indiana obviously has to come up on the map for you, doesn't it? Indiana is a huge, huge state in basketball. I'm going to throw out some names for you, though. And I just want you to think about what these people have in common. I just want you to think about this a little bit. I'm going to give you some names. Are you ready? Mark Turgeon. Eddie Sutton, Lon Kruger, Dean Smith, Mark Fox, Larry Brown, Tad Boyle, Roy Williams, Cotton Fitzsimmons, Dick Harp, Bob Huggins, Bill Guthridge, Bruce Weber, Tad Boyle, Fog Allen, Bill Self, Dean Smith, oh, and James Naismith. What do all these people have in common? They all coached or were born in the state of Kansas. Kansas has a ton of basketball history. And you look at the coaches, you know, that are back there now, obviously with Bill Self, Greg Marshall at Wichita State, you know, Bruce Weber, back there at K-State. The state of Kansas has a ton of basketball history. You know, I talked earlier just a little bit about Lon Kruger. Lon Kruger has taken five different teams and won a tournament game. Kansas State, Illinois, Florida, Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV, and now Oklahoma. Some really, really good coaches come out of the state of Kansas. Jumping over to the NBA, the Oklahoma City Thunder got some news this past week that they did not want. Kevin Durant is now out indefinitely with soreness in that right foot. You might remember, you know, he had that screw inserted back in October. And maybe this is no big deal. Maybe this is just they're trying to be safe. Let me tell you this, big men, and sometimes we don't always think of Durant being as big as he is, but I mean, he's nearly 7 feet tall, doesn't, you know, he plays out on the perimeter a lot, but he's a big guy. And when you think of big men and foot problems, it's not good. Let me just throw a few names out there. And I'm not talking, you know, 7 footers necessarily, but big guys and foot problems in the NBA, bad things happen. Bill Walton, Yao Ming, even guys that were, you know, the 6'7 and 6'8, Grant Hill, Penny Hardaway, all foot problems. The Oklahoma City Thunder had better be cautious with this, because I hope this isn't something where we see this affects Durant for the rest of his career. There have been guys that come back from foot injuries. Michael Jordan, for one, you might remember his second year in the league, breaks his foot. You know, they kept him out. They probably kept him out longer than he wanted to. But Jordan was able, obviously, to come back. You hope this isn't something that affects his career. Here's the question that I have. This season, is it going to spiral out of control for the Thunder? I know we've seen Russell Westbrook look amazing, showing that, hey, I'm going to take this team over, and we're still going to press forward, and we are still going to win games. And at times, they look very good. At times, Westbrook is capable of carrying them. But what if they miss the playoffs? What if they don't make it? They're still in that, you know, very precarious spot of right around the 8th spot. What if they don't make it? And if the season does kind of finish with that bad taste in everyone's mouth, do we see Kevin Durant leave? Contract's up after this year. You know, the thing that this reminds me of is just how hard it is to win. I know a lot of times we like to throw that out there of well, so-and-so only won this many championships and so-and-so only won this many Super Bowls. When you look at a season like what Oklahoma City is having, you had injuries to Westbrook. Then you had the injury to Durant. Then you had the injury to Ibaka. You had another injury to Westbrook. Now you have Durant out indefinitely. It just shows how much kind of luck it takes to win a championship. Everything has to come together. And things like this just push you back further. Steve Nash officially retired on Saturday. You know, he hadn't really played much since about 2012, but Steve Nash played 19 years in the NBA. Two times Steve Nash was the most valuable player. Two times. Pretty amazing for a, you know, 6 foot point guard to be a two-time MVP. Just an amazing career that he had. He had the third most assists in NBA history. Where do you rank Steve Nash all-time point guard-wise? Because he's got to be probably, he might be top five point guards of all time. Think of some of the point guards that are out there. I mean, you've got Magic. You've got Isaiah. John Stockton's got to be on the list. Gary Payton, I guess you could put in there. Bob Cousy, someone like that. Depending on where he played, Oscar Robertson, maybe you mix him into there. But Steve Nash is not far off. And you know, the amazing thing about Nash is how good of a shooter he was. He didn't want to shoot. He never wanted to shoot. He always fought off trying to shoot. He didn't want to shoot. He had to be told to shoot. You know, his coach, Mike D'Antoni, always said, I have to get on him. Steve, you got to shoot. You help us when you do shoot. Always shot a very, very high percentage. I did hear a couple things when Nash retired. I heard a couple people say that Steve Nash is the greatest Canadian basketball player ever. You know, for those of you who don't know, from Canada, went down to Santa Clara, California, and played his college ball there, and then obviously had the long career in the NBA. Greatest Canadian basketball player ever. What does that even mean? Who would even know? That's like being the greatest American cricket player ever. Who would know? Who's he going against, like Bill Weddington and Rick Fox? I don't know if that's... He's one of the greatest players ever. I don't know if we want to put him... I mean, I guess, yes, I guess you're the greatest Canadian basketball player ever. I don't know if that means anything, but I guess you can have that title. NFL. The NFL team owners, like we talked about earlier, have met this week and looked at some new rules. You know, this is the time of year, really, that next season really starts. Because they start looking at the new rules, and if you don't know, teams can propose some rule changers, and then the owners vote on them. And what it is, you know, there's 32 owners, they all vote, and you need 24 votes for a new rule to be installed. Some kind of weird proposals that are out there. I mean, I know the Lions had proposed every single penalty is reviewable. I don't know that we need to slow the game up that much to review a, you know, a holding call or whatever. But I understand from the Lions' perspective, they wanted to throw that out there. Probably the weirdest, the strangest proposal that was out there is the one that was thrown out there by the Indianapolis Colts. And their proposal was that if you were to score a touchdown, you go for a two-point conversion and you get the two-point conversion. You make it, scoring your 8 points. Then you could have a 50-yard field goal and get one more point. You would get 9 points total. I don't want to make light of the problems that Jim Irsay has had with, you know, certain substances, but it makes me think that maybe he was doing some things when he came up with this idea. Do we really need a 9-point play? What if you, like, punt the ball off the upright and then head it into the stand? I don't need it. Just play the game. We don't need to tweak it that much. There might be a few, you know, different changes and some things you can do, but do we need to completely overhaul the game? The game's pretty good. We're all watching it. It made me wonder if the Colts were you know, getting blown out by the Patriots and Irsay thought, okay, we're down 30. How could we score faster? Like, we need like a 30-point play. What if we put in like a 37-point play, which is what they needed? A couple changes have been approved, though. Owners have voted in the NFL, and they have approved a couple you know, rule changes here. Here's one that you might not know about. Now, and no joke, this is true. Third-party medical trainers can call a timeout if they feel that a player looks disoriented. So remember in the Super Bowl, we talked about this on the Daily Dose. Remember in the Super Bowl when Cam Chancellor knocked Julian Edelman goofy. We all heard it. Forget seeing it. You heard it. Now, if a player looks disoriented or confused, a third party, an objective party, can stop the game, have that player come out because they feel like they are not, you know, quite right. Now, here's the thing. We all know that the teams are watching this far more closely than anyone. The Patriots knew Edelman was out on his feet. They just don't care. They're not going to pull him out. And then they're going to pretend like, oh, we had no idea. I didn't even know. Was he hurt? I didn't know. They know. But now you have a third party that can stop play, take a timeout, and ask that player be brought out and evaluated. I think it's good. I think it's good for safety reasons. Here's my problem with this rule. I think this rule, if you look disoriented or confused, they can stop play. Here's my concern. Jay Cutler is going to get like 3 or 4 free timeouts every single game because he looks disoriented and confused almost every single time. Every single play. They're going to be stopping play and being like, Jay, come here. You don't look well. Are you okay? Are you all right? Yeah, I'm fine. Why? Oh, you just have that look. You just have that look about you. I don't know. Just thought you looked disoriented. No, that's just how he looks. That's how he looks all the time. I feel like if the Bears do keep Cutler, I feel like the Bears are going to be the beneficiary of like 5-6 free timeouts a game. That concerns me a little bit. The NFL also approved a couple different chop blocks as far as peel back blocks. If a defensive player is coming in and is already engaged, running backs can't chop their legs. A couple things, you know, just safety. A few things, just safety. Here's one that may slip by you, though. The NFL owners also approved to bypass NFL blackouts. And, you know, blackouts are basically, if your stadium doesn't sell a certain percentage of the seats, and I'm not talking about the luxury boxes and all that, but a certain percentage of the seats, then locally, the NFL will not show your game locally because they want people to go to the game. Now, that's a rule for 2015. I believe it'll carry in 2016. So a couple thoughts on this. Good news for Chargers fans. Your games are going to be on TV, even though there's like 65 of you up in the stands. Good for you. Way to go, Charger fan. But here's the bigger picture, and it makes me think this. I think the NFL is preparing for football in Los Angeles, and I think it's going to be soon, like by 2016. Because a stadium, we talked about, you know, Kroenke has that property in LA, and he looks like he's going to be building a stadium back there. But where would an NFL team in Los Angeles play until that stadium is built? LA Coliseum, which holds like 90,000 people, which they will never fill. And they can put as many tarps up. We all see the tarps. We know what the tarps are. You're just covering seats. NFL is trying to get football in Los Angeles as soon as possible. And I think they may have it by next year. I think it could be that soon. That's why they waived this blackout rule for this upcoming season. I mean, now here's something else to think about. And I've heard this from a couple different people now. We've talked about this already on the show. Los Angeles, you know, wants football. I think they're going to put two teams in there. Couple teams to think about. The Rams, they don't like their situation back in St. Louis, and St. Louis really doesn't care about them. The Rams have some history in Los Angeles. Could the Rams go back to L.A.? I think that's a distinct possibility. The Chargers don't like their situation down in San Diego. Doesn't look like they're going to get a new stadium. Maybe the Chargers and the Rams both end up in Los Angeles. And then we see who wants to take the Raiders. Would St. Louis take the Raiders then? Because the Raiders have a mess of their own back in Oakland, and it doesn't like it's going to get resolved anytime soon. Just throwing those things out there, keep some things like that in mind. One other thing that the NFL is talking about, they are talking about having a Pro Bowl in Brazil. Remember we talked about this back when the Pro Bowl was getting ready to go, and we talked about they need to improve the Pro Bowl? You know, you could just fix the game and change some things, but what they're talking about, it was in Arizona this last year. It's going to be in Hawaii again. They're talking about having it in Brazil maybe in 2017 just to try to get players to go because no one goes. Nobody goes. I mean, we ended up with the red rifle back there starting at quarterback. I mean, nobody goes to these games. None of the players go, let alone fans. None of the players go. They're talking about having a Pro Bowl in Brazil. I wouldn't care about watching it, but yeah, I'd go to it. I don't want to watch it on TV, but I might go to it. You know, there's a lot of talk right now in the NFL, in free agency, about who's going to get Adrian Peterson. There's a ton of talk. I've had a couple people tell me, hey, you know, the Cowboys, you know, they might have lost DeMarco Murray, but they're going to go get Adrian Peterson. Or this team is going to go get Adrian Peterson. The Chargers may go get Adrian Peterson. Here's a problem. And I just want to lob this out there. One problem with this whole who's going to get Adrian Peterson sweepstakes. The Vikings have already said they are keeping Peterson and they're not going to trade him. He's under contract. And they say they are willing to pay him the $12.775 million or whatever it is that he is owed. And they are fine with that. But they will keep him. He's not going anywhere. So all these teams, if you have someone at the office there and they're like, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go get Adrian Peterson. No, you're not. Unless you're the Minnesota Vikings, no, you're not. Because the Vikings have already said, we're not dealing him. We're not moving him. He's staying here. And we're more than willing to pay that money. Everybody, you know, sometimes these trades and these things, they sound really good in Madden football, the video game. But in real world, they don't really work. A lot of times we come up with these great GM moves. Well, you know what the Cowboys should do? They should just go get, you know, Adrian Peterson. Well, yeah, except that he's under contract and they can't really get him, and they sure don't have anything they're going to trade for him. Unless they're going to trade their draft for him. And they're going to have to pay him a significant amount of money. So it doesn't work like that in the real world. I know it sounds good. Sounds good at the bar. It sounds good when you're discussing this. It doesn't always work. Want to talk just a little bit about NFL free agency, because the free agency period is kind of winding down. It's kind of, you know, finishing off. I think NFL free agency is a little bit overrated. I'm going to be honest. I don't think you build your team through free agency. I think you build your team through the draft and through being smart and through getting the right players in free agency when they're available. In the right situations. That's when you see the teams really, really improve. I looked at some of the teams just kind of looking around. And, you know, some of the things that I really liked were just teams that kept their own players. I mean, the Green Bay Packers. They re-signed Randall Cobb. They re-signed Brian Bulaga. And I'm like, those are good moves. They're both young players, 24, 25 years old. They kept their own. That's as good as some of these teams that are going out and signing all these high price free agents. And I look at, you know, teams like Oakland or Buffalo. And yes, they got some players that might be better, but you overpaid so much for them. I don't know if it helps you in the long run. I look at a team like the Minnesota Vikings, who, yes, they didn't really lose anybody, and they got Mike Wallace, the wide receiver from Miami. I don't know if that helps you. Mike Wallace is kind of a prima donna who seems to have problems wherever he goes. He doesn't really seem to get along too well in the locker room. So Minnesota can talk about, oh, look who we added, and we kept all. Yeah, but you might have just added a big, big problem. And so when I look at free agency, I don't know how much it means, because it seems like sometimes free agency is just a little bit overblown. If you go out and sign a bunch of people, I guess you figure you won at free agency, but I don't know if you really did. I know that the most active teams in the past few years in free agency have been teams like Tampa Bay and the Jets and the Jaguars, and we know how they finish every single year. I will say the team that has probably been hurt the most this offseason, and it's not even close, is the San Francisco 49ers. When you look at the players that the Niners have lost, it is absolutely amazing. San Francisco has had a tough offseason so far. I mean, they have lost a ton of players. It really is crazy. And some of that, maybe that's, you know, maybe that's their coach leaving. I don't know. But it really is crazy when you look at what has happened to San Francisco. That was a team that was going to the championship game or the Super Bowl, it seemed like, every year for a while. They may be falling on some tough times here real, real soon. It's going to be interesting to see exactly how it works out for the 49ers. I mean, new coach, new players, a quarterback that sometimes seems like he forgets how to play the position. It's going to be an interesting team to keep an eye on. When you just look at the losses that they've had, I mean, Ray McDonald gone, Stevie Johnson gone, Chris Borland retires, Chris Culver's gone, Mike Iupati's gone, Frank Gore is gone, their coach is gone. There's a lot of you know, things that have happened there. Hey, you got Torrey Smith, though. I guess there's that. I guess Torrey Smith will fix things. Hey, as we do every single week, we've got to get to the Daily Dose top five this week. And the Daily Dose top five, you know, it can go a certain different way, and it just kind of depends. It is a March Madness flavored Daily Dose top five this week. You know, there are certain unwritten rules in sports. And if you don't know what I mean, there are just certain rules. They're not exactly written down. It's not that I would put them down anywhere, but there are certain unwritten rules in the world of sports. Winners stay. When you're playing basketball and your team wins, winners stay on the court. Losers walk. Losers walk was always one that we always had if you were playing certain sports. You know, certain unwritten rules, you don't walk over the pitcher's mound. That's just a rule. I don't care what kind of bat you had when you were getting ready to swing. You always had the logo facing you. There are just certain rules that you have. If you are up by more than 20 in basketball, you don't press. That's just a rule. You just don't do those things. It's not written down anywhere. But there are just certain unwritten rules in the world of sports that you just kind of abide by. Another rule that you might not know. If you are at a sporting event in Los Angeles, I think it is written, it might even be written down somewhere, but I think it's unwritten. You have to leave early. That's when you're at a sporting event in LA, you leave the game early. like, I don't know, third quarter or something. Seventh inning, something like that. They're just rules that everybody knows, and you just abide by them. I'm going to throw out five new rules for March Madness. Five new rules for March Madness, and some of this has to do with some brackets. Some of this has to do with just March Madness rules. If you are a March Madness fan and you love March Madness, and March Madness, like I've told you before, it is the one sporting event every year that actually lives up to the hype that we heap on it. Super Bowl is not always good. World Series sometimes is on the Gardening Network. NBA playoffs sometimes are not always great. NHL, again, back to the Gardening Network. But March Madness is good every single year, but there are some rules that we need to put in just for certain situations, just for certain people, because these instances come up again and again and again. And we need these rules out there. So here are the Daily Dose top five new rules for March Madness. You might want to write these down. Number five, no more. I almost picked that upset in my bracket. Or what might even be worse, I almost picked that upset in my bracket. Oh, I almost picked that. Oh, yeah. Oh, I almost picked Georgia State to beat Baylor. I don't care. If you almost did, it doesn't count. You either had to do it or you didn't. Here's the one that's even worse, though. This is the one that's worse. And I've heard this a number of times just this season. I picked that upset in one of my brackets. No. You don't get to claim that. You don't get to say, I picked that in one of my brackets. Unless you picked it, or unless you picked it in every bracket, you can't just hedge your bets and say, oh, I picked it in one of my brackets. I filled out 37 brackets, and in one of them, I picked that. Yeah, I picked heads unless it was tails, and then I picked tails. No. No more, I almost picked the upset, and no more, I picked that upset in one of my brackets. Doesn't count. You can't say it anymore. Number four on our list. Unwritten rules, March Madness. No more ultimatums, considering this is a single elimination tournament. And what I mean by that is when we look at some of these teams and you look at like UCLA, should UCLA have gotten in? Well, they won, so they should have been in. No, not so fast. It's all about matchups. And they draw someone like SMU who's not a great matchup. That doesn't mean they belonged. That just means they won a game. I still don't think UCLA should have gotten in. And when I look at a team like, say, and I told you last week, I didn't care if Colorado State got in, that you play in a mid-major. If you can't get in out of 68 teams, I don't feel bad for you. But when CSU loses in the NIT in the first round, does that mean they didn't belong? No. I don't have any idea. I think it means they're a little bit soft and obviously felt sorry for themselves and pouted and lost in the NIT. But when it's a single elimination tournament, I can't take ultimatums from that. It's kind of same in other sports too. When I look at sometimes at like the NFL playoffs, those are single elimination playoffs. We can make these ultimatums of, well, Bill Belichick is the greatest coach ever, but you were 30 seconds away from losing a game. It's that close. So I can't make these crazy ultimatums in a single elimination tournament because so many things can happen. Was Connecticut the greatest college basketball team last year? I don't know. They were the greatest in the tournament at that time. They were hot at that time. That's all I can take from it. I can't make these crazy all-time statements. It doesn't fit in a single elimination tournament. It doesn't work that way. Yes, UCLA has won two games. And should Indiana or Texas have been in there? I don't think so. And it doesn't matter if they win or if they lose. That doesn't change those things. They should have been there, shouldn't have been there. I can't make these huge ultimatums in single elimination tournaments. It doesn't work that way. Number three, no bashing collegiate college players based on how they're going to do professionally. I heard someone say this. Went to a local establishment. I heard someone say this where we were at watching some games. Watching Wichita State, and someone says, well, Ron Baker's never going to make it in the NBA. Who cares? I don't care. I don't care. You know, certain people just like professional sports. They love the NFL. They love the NBA. They love professional sports. Certain people just like college. Me, I like both. I like the mix of the two. But the differences are what make them great. I realize that, you know, players like maybe Anderson Hunt at UNLV isn't going to be great in the NBA. I understand that. But he was great in college. And that's kind of what makes college sports so cool. is the fact that he was great in college. When I see Ron Baker with Wichita State, and I don't necessarily, I don't just discount him and say he can't play in the NBA. I think he has a lot better skill set than people think he has. He's much better defensively, I think, than people think he is. But when I look at these players and I say, couldn't they go to the next level? I don't know. I don't know. But I'm not going to just sit there and say, well, hey, Tim Tebow's never going to be great in the NFL. I don't care. I don't care. I'm watching college right now. And that's what makes college athletics great, is because you have players like that. You have the Jeff Shepherds. You have the Juan Dixons. You have the players that, for whatever reason, they're in the right spot for the right time, and they are a great player collegiately. I don't want to hear about what they're going to do at the next level. I don't care. I could care less. Johnny Manziel was great in college. Is he going to be great in the NFL? Doesn't look that way. But you know what? He was really, really fun to watch in college. Enjoy it while you have it. Number two on my list. No cheering for a number one seed over a number 16 seed. And here's what I heard. I was at a game. This was probably 2 or 3 years ago. I was at a game, and we were watching. It was Arizona. It was Arizona last year playing Weber State, and Weber State was up early. It ended up Arizona came back and passed them up and ended up winning the game. But we're all at this establishment, and we are cheering for Weber State because we're like, hey, what a great upset this would be. A 16 over a 1, that would be incredible. And we have these morons that are going, that'd ruin my bracket if they actually won it. I don't want to. Do you have any grasp of what you're watching? You might be seeing history. You could be seeing something that has never happened before. You're not allowed to cheer for the 1 over the 16 because it would ruin your bracket. Dumbest thing I've ever seen. Do you think when David beat Goliath, do you think there were like some Israelites saying, you know, this is going to ruin my bracket. I had a Goliath winning the whole thing. Or like back in colonial time, did you have like colonists saying, you know, I had the British going all the way in my pool. I hope, seriously, you might be seeing something you've never seen before. Cheer for the 16. Come on, have some sense. I realize it's probably not going to happen, but you got to at least. Don't give me that it's going to ruin my bracket. Idiots. Number one, new rules for March Madness. Number one, right here. And I don't know if this one's going to be popular, but I honestly feel no bashing of Dick Vitale. I actually overheard this when we were watching games this last week, and I know it's not on ESPN, but Vitale was doing some pregame stuff, and he does, and I heard, oh, he's so cheesy, and oh, he's so stupid, and he's just this old guy, and he doesn't even know. Yes, I get that Dick Vitale, it's, you know, kind of a shtick, and but it's real. I mean, it really is real. But did you know that Dick Vitale gives 5 scholarships every year out of his own pocket annually to boys and girls clubs? Did you know that Dick Vitale has a new book out called It's Awesome Baby, 75 Years of Memories, a Lifetime of Opinions on the Game? And 100% of the proceeds from that book go to the Jimmy V Foundation for Cancer Research. Did you know that? Don't bash Dickie V. Yes, it's kind of cheesy. I understand. But you couldn't find a better guy and a great spokesman for the game of basketball. And he means it. He means it. It's not fake. That's absolutely who he is. You know, I was fortunate enough to see a 5-star basketball camp that Dick Vitale was at. And for those of you who don't know, at some of these coaches' clinics, what you have is you have coaches up in the stands, and then you have a coach down on the floor, and he has some players come in, and they're running some of his drills or running some of his offense or his defense or whatever it might be. And Dick Vitale was out there talking, and he was talking to a player that had kind of caught his attention during the drills. They have local teams come in, might be high school team, might be a small college or whatever, come in and do the drills. And I saw Dick Vitale. He was talking to a kid that had just kind of impressed him with his hustle. And he said, son, where are you going to be going to college next year? And the kid said, I'm not. I don't have the money. I don't have the opportunity to do that. Dick Vitale kind of was taken aback, and he said, oh, you need to be going. You have some ability. And he said, you know what? I'm going to make this happen for you. I'm going to pay 100% of your tuition and your books. You're going to college. Saw that with my own eyes. Dick Vitale is a great guy. He's a legend. And no, I'm not getting any money for plugging his book or telling you anything about him. I'm just telling you, no bashing Dickie V. The guy's an institution. You got to enjoy it. Come off your high horse. You can't. When I heard that the other day, oh my God, I can't believe he's still doing that. So stupid. Yes, I know. But you can't bash Dick Vitale. That is your top five new rules for March Madness. Hey, next week, we will get you ready for the Final Four. Take a look a little more in depth at some of those games that are going out there and what you might expect in the Final Four that will be coming up. We're going to start looking forward to the NFL draft. It's about a month away. Just a little over a month away to the NFL draft. Start looking at maybe some team needs and some directions that teams might going. Look at the NBA playoff race. That is starting to get closer and closer, and we're starting to see some shape. Who's going to be in, who's going to be out, and as usual, our Daily Dose top five. Hey, like I said before, if you get an opportunity, please, 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 go on iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, give us that five-star rating, and make up some nice lies about the show and tell us how much you love it. I thank you so much for listening. Slowly but surely, our numbers are going up, and I really, really do appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening. I want to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great week.